exactly 6 o'clock this morning. And the date is June, did I say June 3rd? It's a Tuesday. And you get up, because I want you to hear this show. Hurry up, get up. As I said, the show is Sunrise, the station 99.5 FM. It is 6:04 in the morning, and good morning, Eddie Soto is our engineer this morning.
Good morning, Marjorie.
Going to take us into the 7 o'clock hour when the WBAI morning show comes on. But right now, we have an in-studio guest that I'm so happy to have. Lots of you have written me emails, actually, asking me about the woman, Carol Taylor, who calls in every day and has really become part of the show in so many ways. And I've known about Carol Taylor a long time, and it's just a joy to meet her and to hear about her work in a more direct way, Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Marjorie, and good morning, listeners. It is delightful to be here today.
I'm so happy.
And
to have
I just want to tell you what happened. We are very spiritual people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to me on the way here? I was waiting for a bus in Brooklyn. And, of course, that's the population, the second largest population of black people in America, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very comfortable in the streets no matter what hour. So I'm standing there waiting for, I'm aware, I'm on my toes, waiting for one of the buses to take me to the subway. And a beautiful brother, Ras, I'm saying hello to brother Ras Ina. And do you know this man turned on his CD, stopped the car, and he said, "We can't pass you up," he said. "You've done too much for our community."
Oh, boy.
And he picked me up, and he started singing the Lord's Prayer to a CD that he has. I said, "My God, I've got to tell Marjorie and the listeners about this." And so that was beautiful.
Yes.
And so I told him, my son has a, Lawrence has a management company, singers and stuff. I said, "You call this man. If you don't have a manager, you call him." So that was one beautiful spiritual thing that happened. And the other, I get on the subway, at number 4, and I'm sitting next to a man, and I said, "Are you all right?" Because I kind of squeezed it. He said, "Yes, sister, I'm okay." His name is, I'm going to shout out to him, Brother Glenroy. He apparently does a lot of volunteer work for Gary Null.
Oh.
And so we rapped about WBAI on the way here, and it was really, really lovely.
Well.
And then taking a nice walk through these caverns, you know, and hardly anybody was around.
Yeah.
So I'm already keyed up, girl.
Well, it's great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
And we're going to try to get through a number of things this morning. But, Carol, let's tell people a little bit about you. I mean, we know you from the little black book.
Yes, Black Male Survival in America, Staying Alive and Well Again in an Institutionally Racist Color of Society, yes.
But let's introduce people to you, to your beginnings as an activist. Maybe you could, in brief, give us sort of an outline. Let's do an outline.
Well, I guess activism started as a child when there were all kinds of things going on.
Where are you from, Carol?
Born in Boston, Massachusetts, raised upstate New York on a farm, so I do all of those farm things.
Really?
I can milk cows and grow vegetables and can them and toss a pig over my shoulder, so I'm really down to earth.
Now, who would have guessed that?
Yeah, all right,
raised
okay.
On a farm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I went into, I applied to Cornell University and home economics because my dad, who is a real firebrand, said, "Well, you can get into languages afterwards. You go into home economics, it's easier." I had an interview about age 18 with the dean of the economics department, and she said, "Well, Miss Taylor, you know we have quota system for Negroes." Mm-hmm. Well, maybe my activism started, real activism started then. I don't know. Anyway, I didn't go to Cornell. I took my entrance exams there. Good enough to take entrance exams there, but not good enough to be admitted. Okay, went to Elmira. Not the reformatory. No, it was then a women's college. And they said, "Miss Taylor, we would be happy to have you." And so then I had to do some backtracking because in high school I was fighting every day, people calling me blackie and nigger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was nothing there, very little there, and a different class of people. So then I had to backtrack because I was always looking for somebody to call me name or do something against me because of my color.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so then I had to be nice.
Yeah.
So then I learned a lot. And then in the middle of that, my father died. My mother, who was a registered nurse and looked white, she carried on after my father died, sold the farm and went back to New York, said, "Well, I'll keep you in college for a whole year, and then you got to go probably into nurse's training," which I did at Bellevue Hospital for 3 years, and then out of that started doing nursing, and then decided, well, I want to look around and see what else is available to do because I'm inquisitive and I want to see what I can do, and I applied to the UN because my French was fluent at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Before they could say yes, an airline, Mohawk Airlines, which is was a regional carrier, decided, well, we want to hire a Negro girl. Listen, all of this is going into my autobiography,
right.
By the way.
Well,
I'm looking for an agent and I'm looking for a publisher because I have a unique story as the nation's first black flight attendant. So then that came about, and then I met a fabulous Trinidadian. And then my, I had met a Jamaican woman in nurses training. She introduced me to rice and peas and ding and sparrow and calypso and all that kind of thing. So my life took a turn mm-hmm. for the better. And we had been accustomed to bland food up in upstate New York. And then I discovered pepper sauce. And I've been peppery ever since.
Right.
Okay, so then I left the country and went to Trinidad for a year, learned cricket. I was scoring, I told Glenroy this morning on the way here, I scored cricket. I learned mm-hmm. it so mm-hmm. well and had escapades there. I've been kidnapped in three countries. Mm. I mean, just, you know, really
adventure.
Exciting stuff.
Yeah.
And then went to London, followed my husband to London. Three fantastic years. Rex Nettleford putting us through in the West Indian Student Center because I was dancing after my daughter was born there, my daughter Cindy, and natural childbirth, mm-hmm. which they can have.
Right.
24 doggone hours of labor.
Yeah.
And marching in front of West, what is that, Whitehall.
Uh-huh.
Marching against the immigration, the British immigration, racist immigration policies against West Indians.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started writing for an Afro-Caribbean magazine, Flamingo, and interviewing exciting people like Sugar Ray Robinson and Billy Rose Paul, a high fashion designer, and Danny Williams, a singer from South Africa. Just learning also through Pearl and Edric Connor, I was the assistant manager in their theatrical agency.
Mm-hmm.
So then my experience has been wide. Met Yann Karrueu, that handsome man from Guyana,
yes.
and Teddy Jagan, that handsome man also from Guyana,
mm-hmm.
and Williams, the painter from Guyana, and,
well,
and
that's
people from Trinidad mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing.
You've had a lot of experience.
Then I came back here for 2 years with my daughter, and then they assassinated Kennedy, and I said, oh, geez, let me out of the country with my little black daughter so that I can show her people in important decision-making positions, so she grows up with a complete psyche, because our people in America who have been born and brought up here, generally speaking, have been so repressed, oppressed, suppressed, that to seek togetherness, to be organized, to do the stuff we really need to do, we still have a lot of road to cover. So I went to live in Barbados for 14 years.
All right,
I didn't realize it was so long.
Yeah, let me just give people the time. It's
6:12.
It is about 61 degrees out, and we're talking to Carol Taylor. One of the things she's done is write the Little Black Book, and we're going to talk about what that is in a minute.
Fabulous.
All right, Carol, let's bring it up a little bit to your involvement in what was the first issue you would say you were really, really all out for? That you, would it have been the Little Black Book?
Since I've been back, I guess it was the racism that I came back from Barbados in 77 and realized that the racism, colorism, I call it, because it's not racism, it is color. The sticking point in America is color of a person's skin. And because there's only one race. There's no S on the bottom, on the end of that word. And if you will see and hear anything that brings information to you, you will hear people, professors, preachers, politicians, talking about, well, the races. No, fool. There is no S on the end of that word. There is only one race, and it began with beautiful blue-black people in Africa. Those are the ancestors of every single human being. And for you not to teach that, and to teach Eurocentric, I'm going to say crap, all these years pouring into the heads of little children something that is not true, that's where I really get upset.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose that was the issue that I met when I came back in 77 and started with Dr. Marie Saunders, and Judge Bruce Wright was so instrumental in helping us put together the Institute for, quote, Interracial, end quote, Harmony Incorporated. And I developed the racism, colorism quotient test, the concept. And Dr. Saunders, who is a psychologist, black, Cherokee, white, put together 20 questions, and we have some. I brought you a test
right,
today.
And what we thought, listeners, is if we have a time, we'll do one or two of them and maybe take a couple of calls about
uh-huh.
responses.
Yes.
But so what is the concept of the test?
The test is not a panacea, obviously, Marjorie. It is a tool to determine, bring racism, as Professor Lani Guinier says, mm-hmm. out into the open and deal with it in a forthright manner, which is necessary for WBAI, of course, here because of the racism, colorism, which is extant here, like it is in every arena of people activity. And there are people who say, oh, well, it's not a racist issue. It's a colorist issue. And we have got to begin to define exactly and delineate the extent of damage that has been done to people, irrespective of the color, in this society, by the society, by the miseducation system, as Dr. Leonard Jeffries and Dr. Herbert, the Henrik Clark and others have, and Dr. Amos Wilson have so aptly described.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So the first issue, I suppose, when I came back, was the issue of racism, colorism.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the little black book stemmed from that because it's entitled Black African Male Survival in America or Staying Alive and Well in an Institutionally Racist Society. And
it really addresses how young black men, when approached by the police, should handle themselves.
Got it.
It's a how-to.
I am outraged, Marjorie. That people see, if white women in this country decided that they would no longer support a racist, colorist police department which murders black African males like they're going out of style, then in that sort of thing would be over in less than an hour. If Mayor Giuliani decided, oh my goodness, I look in the mirror and I've turned into a black male, and my son Andrew has turned into a black male.
Mm-hmm.
And within an hour, he would address the untreated racism, colorism within the New York City Police Department, which battered and damaged for life. I'm a nurse. I know what he's going through. Abner Louima.
Mm-hmm.
And who've killed so many people, and some of the names are in the back of the little black book. Let me tell you something. Since October 16th, last year, Marjorie, I alone have counted over 70, not 7 or 17, over 70 names of black African males who have been murdered by this nation's police department. And those names will be going into the next edition of the Little Black Book, which is coming out very quickly. Okay. I have a son mm-hmm. who has taken that over, and he's arranging the printing, Lawrence.
Right.
I'm very fortunate. Mm-hmm. I have two children. I didn't tell you.
I have two children. Lawrence
and Cindy.
Cindy
lives with my grandson, Tyler, in Barbados. He's 4, going on 44. He asked his mother the other day, hey, Mom, you know, I was choking on that seed the other day. How come you didn't give me the Heimlich maneuver? I said, oh, my God.
Yes. Grandchildren.
So I have one grandchild.
Now, you've been standing guard outside of the prison where Reverend Al Sharpton is being kept and the Vieques 4 were kept. She has
I brought
her sign
my whistle,
with her, and she's doing a count.
And I have day 43 today for Reverend Al Sharpton. Of course.
He got
the principal of the thing, the bell. Eddie, you're arriving.
Now, you've been out there every day.
Just about. There are days that I haven't been there, but there are some unsung heroes and heroines.
Talk about
who have been there every day. And our young Cynthia Davis, who I don't know how she still has a voice to lead the chants.
Mm-hmm.
Cynthia Davis. Mm-hmm. You should have her on.
I will get her on.
When you can. When she
we
can,
will do it.
After this.
Yes.
Vieques C. Marina No, which means Navy No.
Mm-hmm.
And I did call you and tell you about the police officers. See, this is one of the things. Who stood up there, Costello, an Italian-American, and I'm sure he's Catholic. We need to rein in some of these Catholics and Italians because, you know, they've been getting away with absolute murder. If you look at the number of cops in New York City alone who have murdered black African males, most of them are Catholic and most of them are Italian. And I want to call right now on the people who are running the Catholic religion in New York City. Come out from under your robes and behind your doggone pulpits and denounce what's going on with the NYPD. Doggone it. Aren't we human? Doggone it. I mean, this is outrageous, the murders that go on, and they get out, and don't even talk about Amadou Diallo and his poor mother, Katia, too. Yeah. I just cry when I think of those parents. So trusting in the American system of justice.
Yeah,
give me a damn break.
Yeah, she was very trusting. Carol, what is it like? What is the mood of the people outside? And that's one question. But the other one is, why hasn't there been an uprising around the incarceration of Reverend Al?
Let me tell you, there are people who feel very, very angry, outraged, betrayed by what this country is doing to our leader. You can't tell me who to choose or whether to choose or who's my leader. That's one of the things that irks people. You can't tell. Like, Utrice Lead is a leader. You can't tell me that she hasn't had a track record with this very station, with the kind of thing that's going on in this country against people of color, because we've all been so blasted miseducated as to who the hell we are.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is an African. If you're going to claim a land mass and talk about, well, I'm German and I'm Irish and I'm South American and I'm Latino, and no, you start claiming your first land mass and everyone is an African. All right, then you say African, German, American, South American, whatever. But stop this egregious lie. All right? So the mood of the people is very, very volatile out there.
Yes.
And that's why when that Costello cop was saying, we were saying, Vieques, no. He's saying, Reverend Al, no. He nearly caused a thing out there. And through the sturdy leadership of Cynthia Davis, she got the people back because they were going for him.
Boy, I bet.
And well, I was going for him.
What
she, and she did
to him
say,
to say.
And he's saying, Reverend Al, no. And she was saying, listen, we're not here for that. And he has a right, freedom of speech. I said, yeah, but he can, freedom of speech in his bathroom with that kind of thing. You don't yell fire in a crowded theater.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly hoping that Carrione, C-A-R-I-O-N-E, of the 72nd Precinct, his supervisor, wrote him up.
Mm-hmm.
And I intend to follow up as an activist, as a black activist, I intend to follow up with a letter to Police Commissioner, what's his name, Keurig?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Keurig. How many people are there, like when you're there? Are we talking about 20 people, 100
people?
We
are talking about the quality of people. I am not counting
the numbers.
Although somebody said there were nearly 500 people there on Saturday.
Great.
Oh, and July 4th. Is that tomorrow?
Yes. Wednesday, yes.
There's going to be a huge barbecue there.
Oh.
So if you like food, you like activism, you like the feeling of camaraderie when people are getting together, you know, I get there. And this is at the Sunset Park Metropolitan Detention Center. Isn't that a mouthful?
Yes, it is.
All right, that's at 8080 29th Street. Know how I get there, Marjorie?
No.
I get my little black self, and I'll be 70 in December. I get my black self black female self, on the 41 bus in Brooklyn, and then I get off at Nevins. I take a walk back.
Mm-hmm.
They're accustomed with seeing my signs now, all the bus drivers. I get a number 37 bus, and it goes right down 3rd Avenue, and you get off at 29th, and you can see and hear the noise.
Before you get
and
there.
There's so many truck drivers and other people in cars that go by. I have a sign that says, blow your horn or honk for justice for Reverend Sharpton. Now it is. It was the Vieques 4.
Right.
But, of course, now it's the Vieques 1.
He said, what do you make of the... You see, I thought there would be just a tremendous upheaval with the arrest of Reverend Al.
Well, there should be.
If
only the people that he has helped would turn up every day or every other day or even once. All right? But
does it surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me, because I know that we have a... a community of scared individuals.
Yeah.
They may be afraid about immigration, which is another thing we could talk about mm-hmm. for 3 hours, and the racism, colorism in there. Mm-hmm. They may be afraid of their bosses finding out because there's racism, colorism at the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we as black African people get our clothes on in the morning, quite frankly,
mm-hmm.
except that we are strong. And we will prevail.
We keep showing up.
Oh, yes, we will.
Yeah, we do.
And Marjorie, I love you for your spirit also.
Thank you.
You are, it takes one to know one.
Yeah. we're like water. We just keep hanging in there.
Yeah.
Just keep dripping.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up this, it says, "Damn you, America, you have failed me." And it's an article I wrote. I saw one of the demonstrators outside Reverend Al Sharpton's jail there. He had on the back of his coat this sentence, "Damn you, America, you have failed me." And I said this evocative sentence covered the black male demonstrator's entire back in bold, stark lettering as he marched with us other protesters on Monday, the 28th of May this year, at the daily rally against the vicious jailing of the VACUS 4. I'm saying, and I got it from my son, how about freeing Al Sharpton and the VACUS 4 on July 4th?
Tomorrow.
Okay. So I understand that Rev has finished with his hunger strike.
Mm-hmm.
But a familiar nostalgic feeling washed over me as soon as I saw that sad sentence. And I was immediately caught by its wistfulness juxtaposed to outrage. I wrote, although those exact words have never occurred to me, they were a perfect illustration of the awesome recognition of an abandonment felt not only by me, surely, but most probably also felt by countless thousands of black Africans within the mean boundaries of the United States of America. And of course it goes on, and I list things like Coca-Cola. Do you know, $192.5 million settlement, but five other black Africans who have been discriminated against with Coca-Cola, and I will never drink that again,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it's not good for you anyway. they said, heck no, we're going to hold out for suing your racist colors behind
mm-hmm,
for
mm-hmm.
five or 1 billion or something like that, 1.5 billion. Bless them. So I hereby freely admit my feelings of empathy, sympathy, and utter agreement with my brave black African brother at that demonstration outside the Sunset Park Metropolitan Detention Center against the evil, unconstitutional, unfair, outrageous, immoral, unnecessary, counterproductive, mean, dangerous, inept, unforgivable, martyr-making, and racist colorist internment of Reverend Al Sharpton, Roberto Ramirez, Jose Rivera, and Adolfo Carrion.
Mm-hmm.
This state-sanctioned kidnapping, along with the unconscionable bombing on the island of Vieques, Puerto Rico, for 61 years, should be more than enough for citizens who say they want a truly democratic nation to call for the impeachment of resident George W. Bush. Now, that was just one of my little articles.
One of them. Right, they're all equally as powerful. Well, it is 6:28 in the morning. We're talking to Carol Taylor, activist, author of Little Black Book, the colorism, you call it, test? Or
yeah, racism, colorism.
Colorism.
We have to slide into accurate linguistics.
Yeah, we do. And we're going to, but you know what, phones are ringing. People want to talk to you already.
I'm
and
sure
we
they
really
do.
Only have another about 30, not even 30 minutes. So I think what we'll do, Carol, is we're going to take a short break, let people know that it's about 64 degrees outside. And the number here, I don't even need to give it out, they're calling already, 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. I'm Marjorie Moore here for Sunrise. Sunrise airs every day, Monday through Friday.
Thank God.
6 to 7 a.m., thank you. And Eddie Soto is the engineer here every day, Monday through Friday. And we'll be right back with Carol Taylor. Oh, It is exactly 6:30 in the morning here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And you know that you can get a copy of any Sunrise show by calling 1-888-31-RADIO. That's 1-888-31-RADIO. And the Sunrise email address is WBAISunrise, all one word, at AOL.com. That's WBAI Sunrise, all one word, at AOL.com. And I think what we're going to do, listeners, just to get as many of you in, please be as concise as you can be. Give me your name and your place, and you can make up a name. It doesn't have to be your real name, but something for me to relate to. And we're going to just go right to the phones and let you have a talk with Carol Taylor, our special guest this morning. And good morning. You're on the air. Hello? Good morning. Are we there? Good morning.
Carol?
Hang on. What is your name, please?
This is Howie.
Hi, Howie. And your place?
Planet Earth.
Good. That'll work. That works for me. Good morning. She's here, yes.
Carol, I just wanted to ask you if you feel, as I believe you stated on Hugh Hamilton's show last Thursday when you called in, that the people who are in opposition to what's going on at the station are racists, like Amy Goodman and Bernard White.
Did you want to say and? Are you finished?
Well, I think you included everyone in your statement.
Of course I did, and I include myself also, because anytime...
You're racist
absolutely.
Too?
Now you're going to let me answer? Absolutely, racist colorist. I said, I didn't just say racist, because there's only one race. But we have all been miseducated in America as to who we are, number one, and number two, as to who people of color or people with observable melanin are. And so as a result, you've got a situation at the station here, WBAI, and you have a situation in every other arena of people activity of unmitigated, untreated racism, colorism, that has to be begun to, we have to begin to treat that and end the colossal denial that the United States is involved in, be it foreign policy, be it local policy, be it radio station WBAI. And for us to act like this is not true is not only incensing, angry making, but it is insanity.
Howie,
do I answer you?
No, that wasn't my question.
What was your question? You said, did you call the people racist, colorist?
The people
and I
who
said,
are
yes.
in opposition to Utrecia's leadership.
Absolutely.
At the station. Is Utrecia racist?
We're all, didn't you
we're
hear
all racist is what you're saying,
we
right?
We are all racist, colorist, but some of us are dealing with it. Your group is not.
Okay, that I think that stands
thank you, Howie.
On itself.
Thank you. We have a lot of calls. Carol's very, very straightforward and honest, unlike some other people. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Marjorie.
Hello, and who's
this? Sam from the Bronx.
Hey, Sam. I got your message.
Okay. Hi, Sam.
Good. Hi.
I listen to you all the time there, bro.
Listen, you and I know one another. We met at the Hempstead Museum.
Oh, wow.
A long time ago.
My
I was
goodness.
Doing a great deal of speaking on Long Island at the time.
You got a good memory there, fella.
And the FBI was hot in my case. You know?
Well, the FBI, the CIA, the old good old white boy detectives are always looking for some black African to jump on. Do you know that you should write the State Department like I did? John Kenneth Galbraith was on TV one day, and he looked in the camera. He said, well, if they'd have a bunch of files on me, I bet they got one on you. Pointed. And I said, bingo. And I wrote for under the Freedom of Information Act. And my Lord in heaven, the file I got, well, of course, with a lot of blacked out kind of names, was that's all part of my autobiography. They have me delivering a communist dog to a communist couple in Venezuela. I've never done that. They have me arrested in front of the White House. I've never done that. And when I wrote them and said, this is not true, and I can prove I was in Barbados, oh, well, we need an act of Congress to take that stuff out. So I know exactly what you've been going through. What's your question?
Let me be very brief. Perhaps maybe you need to do another book called, you know, The Little White Book. We've been studied up and down, and they have analyzed us like crazy.
Of course, because...
But they have not been analyzed. So maybe you need to do A Little White Book and tell people how not to get into trouble being a racist.
Well, now, you're going to do that book, Sam, because my book, that I'm working on is my autobiography, and that's giving me a run for my money.
All right, thanks, Sam.
My favorite, just before you go, my favorite page is your fourth page, and that's place your little beautiful black picture here, that page, because if there's any white cops out there that really have a human element in their bodies, they would follow that.
Well, yeah, well, we're all black. You know, that some of us are just a little less or more rinsed out than others.
All right. Thanks, Sam. Keep listening.
Bye-bye.
All righty. And we'll go to the next caller. This is WBAI Sunrise. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. My name is Sam from Brooklyn.
Hey, Sam.
And I want to speak to your guest.
Hi, Sam. I'm here.
She's right there.
Ready and waiting.
You seem very informed of a lot of the issues that are going on. I just want to speak to...
I've lived them.
I'm sure you have. I just want to speak to the issue of Reverend Al Sharpton.
Yes. I love that topic.
I sympathize with what's going on there, and I think it's really terrible that he's been jailed.
Have you been out to the jail?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, well, let's put your talking where the action is, or the action where you're talking is. I tell this to everybody. Oh, I think it's so sad that Sharpton, what's happening? Well, have you been out there to show other people and the Reverend and the VA? Because for exactly, because talk is cheap, Sam.
Yeah, I understand that.
He's good-natured.
I haven't been out there. But
what is it you want to say which won't have too much credibility since you ain't been out there?
What I'm saying is that while I do sympathize with that...
And let him finish.
Yeah, that and a token will get you a subway ride. But go ahead. Go ahead, son.
I think, you know, his effort and everything is admirable. But we do have to understand that there is laws in the United States and that...
Yeah, white man's laws.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, then we need to fight those laws. The case is that, you know, they have to make a decision as to whether or not they're going to continue or not to bomb Vieques. And until that happens, I mean, the government has to draw lines on people trespassing. I think that, you know, we need to understand that we need to at least, I mean, the federal government, yeah, I mean, there are some bad things about it. But, I mean, we still need to protect and serve, you know, and we need to keep order.
Who was it that said the law is an ass?
We should at least respect that much. That's all I'm saying.
All right, Sam, you're entitled to your opinion. That's
okay,
thank you. We've got a lot of other calls, Carol. Let's see if we can get other people in. It's 6:38 a.m. Hello, you're on the air.
Marjorie?
Yes, good morning.
Marjorie and Carol, you're great. Go ahead, Carol.
You'd have been here with us had you gotten my message.
Hi, Florence Rice. You fabulous fighting consumer warrior.
But it's just great to know that you're out there in that little black book.
Well, listen, Florence, I don't know if people know, when I was the president in Barbados of the Bajan Consumer League, which I helped Maud Wilkins start so many years ago, because consumerism, of course, is very much a part of fighting against racism, colorism. I used to get longhand letters from this brave lady. I had never met her.
Mm-hmm.
And she helped us win the fight against telephone company and the light and power company.
Oh, yeah. She's
you know?
These big
corporations that like to do in the little man and woman. And so she's proven herself.
A warrior, Florence.
Absolutely.
That's what you are.
Yes. You know who I'm trying to... Yes.
Carol.
Yes.
Listen, how do I get to where is it? Brooklyn from New York.
Okay, so...
To where you are.
If you take an R train...
Okay.
You can get off at 25th Street
okay.
and just walk quietly the four blocks to 29th and 3rd.
Okay.
If you are on a bus, you might want to go down and take the 51 bus across the bridge.
What bridge?
Manhattan Bridge.
Uh-huh.
You can go down to Chinatown near there and get the 51 bus if you don't want to go underground.
Okay.
And you can come over and transfer to the 37 bus and just ride right on up there in style.
You'll right.
probably meet a lot of the marchers. Because, you know, more and more every day outside the Sunset Park Metropolitan Detention Center, we're getting more and more people. And people of all the rainbow. It's a mosaic, it's a kaleidoscope,
yes.
It's beautiful.
Well, Carol, you know, what white folks over the years, they intimidate black folks.
Not anymore, babe.
They intimidate you. And so, therefore, someone spoke about why we haven't rose up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying many people stop to think about the problems they'll get into. I am delighted that, you know, that many of us have just decided to do it or die.
Massa day done, babe.
All right, thank you.
So it's great. Marjorie,
yes.
Hi.
Hi, Florence.
And good having you on.
Thank you, Florence.
Okay.
Thank you for your support.
All right.
All right, I want to say something, too, you know, Carol. I want to address this. It's 6:41. People have to leave. This is WBAI Radio. I'm Marjorie Moore, and my guest this morning is Carol Taylor. Carol, I want to address this idea of who speaks for the community a little bit, because one of the most frustrating things for me, and I'm just waking up from it,
okay,
is that so many issues that are, I would say, issues people of color need to deal with are addressed or are translated for us through white leadership, whether it's radio, politics, even social movements that I've been involved in. I show up at the meeting around an issue like, say, it could be lead poisoning or housing,
mm-hmm.
the homeless,
mm-hmm.
and the leadership, the people that are speaking to the legislators in our behalf, are white voices. And these tend to be people who do not live with us,
yes.
who have no experience with us and our problems,
mm-hmm.
who really are earning a living from it and notoriety from it. But the nitty-gritty details of the issue and what we need to do to resolve it, we're bereft of that.
Yes.
So it just gets to be a lot. To me, I listen to it, it's like hearing, I don't know how
the
to...
Voices from
just
outer space.
Stuff. It's just stuff and
yeah.
meaningless
yeah.
because they don't have that connection to the issue. And the thing that needs to happen, it seems to me, is giving up. There has to be a giving up. And, you know,
well.
I want to say the woman who said her name in the South,
mm-hmm.
who Ann, oh, she's an activist.
Okay.
A white woman who said... her name just slipped my mind, Anne something. Someone will think of it. She said, we have to, as a white person, we have to step back and be resources
mm-hmm.
while people of African descent control their own destiny.
I understand what you're saying. People of African descent is, of course, Marjorie, everybody, I would remind
you. All right, right.
Okay.
She has to keep educating
and, yeah.
us about that. And me too.
Yeah, and me too. And one of the best pieces of work, research, that I have ever come across, which answers in a lot of ways what you ask about white people taking the, and they're accustomed to taking the dominant position, even if they're walking along the sidewalk and they're pushing you out of the way because you're supposed to step in the curb
yeah.
off the curb, you know, that's
yeah.
or in the supermarket where they're running up against your heels with they don't see us. They
yeah.
don't see us.
Yeah.
You know, they've been carefully conditioned not to see us, not to pay attention to our opinions, and our opinions are less important than theirs. And, you know, that means they are victims. They are victims of racism, colorism. There are no winners with racism, colorism,
and it's
extent. But I wanted to
mm-hmm.
say, this working paper, 189, of Dr. Peggy McIntosh from Wellesley College.
I
now,
know.
Yes.
I've heard
that,
her.
You have got to see that paper.
I will
because,
do that.
I will make sure that you get a copy.
Thank you.
Because what you will do, there are about 46 or more statements where she acknowledges through her studies of women and male dominance, she acknowledges her the privilege of her white skin, the unearned privilege of her white skin color.
Yes.
Now, when you say that to somebody and they have all these protective mechanisms in place, they get very upset.
Yes.
But, you know, but that is not why we're saying the things we say.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologically, we want to help people to healing.
Yes.
And to the, that will involve stirring up this kind of stuff that they're accustomed to believing and acting out. And it's hurtful.
Yes.
But believe me, as a registered nurse and as a person who's a mother and a grandmother, I care about all of my ancestors. And I have all the world in me.
Mm-hmm.
So that don't think because I'm speaking in the majority about people with observable skin melanin that I forget
right.
my Cherokee and white yes. and Irish and other English background.
That's exactly
okay?
right.
So maybe I'm in a very good position since I'm in an admixture
yeah.
of humanity.
Yeah.
All right? But
yeah.
It's got to come from somewhere.
People should not assume that you don't love humanity because you are educating us about reality.
Well, that's why we came up with this test,
yes.
which every single police department in our society in America, and in fact the whole world,
do you want to give us...
Colorism goes all over the world.
Carol, do you want to give us like one question that makes a good example for what the test can do in terms of sparking dialogue
okay.
or facilitating some activity?
All right.
And listeners, maybe
okay.
we'll throw out a question.
A couple in your neighborhood, which is, quote, racially, end quote, the same, decides to adopt a child of a different, quote, race. Of course, there's no such thing. Your feelings are that, A, the child will fare well depending on how nurturing and loving the parents are. B, the child will probably suffer because he or she is, quote, different, end quote. C, the couple should move to a mixed neighborhood where the, quote, different child won't stand out. And D, if the couple wants to make that kind of a choice, you're glad the child has found a home. That's one of them.
All right, let's stop there. And people heard that. And if you want to address it when we take your call, that would be a good thing.
Well, they probably don't.
Let's
because
see.
I think what we need to do is have reestablish more regular racism, colorism, quotient test forums.
All right.
Where we can really adequately handle the questions because people get very upset.
Is it something we could do on the air if we had more time,
yes,
Carol?
Yes, absolutely true. And it's something that would help the community because we all need it. The doctors,
you know,
the nurses, the teachers, the business people.
Maybe it's enough that we could turn it into like a special.
Absolutely.
And make it available. Make what happens in the process of taking the test with listeners available to listeners
You'd
so that they could then. All right, let's talk. We'll
yeah.
talk after the show. All
sure.
right, let's hear from some more people.
Yeah.
647, good morning. You're on the air. Hello. You're on.
Hello, this is Brother Dahoud from Queens.
Good morning, Brother Dahoud.
I love
Hi.
Marcy,
how you
I
doing?
Love you too.
Thank
and
you.
Eddie.
Thanks. And Eddie too. That's it.
And I got a little black book for the whole family, all my boys.
Good.
And every time I see her, I get a book from her.
Well, the point
and
is,
I go to everything.
I would love to invite all the people who have the little black book out today, tomorrow, or the next day to Sunset Park. We would have thousands of people. Get up off your duff.
Yep.
What's
She's my
question?
Hero.
All right.
She's my hero, and Al Sharpton is my hero.
All right. Thank you.
And listen, you should put it in two categories. I know we all are from Africans, but we got two fathers. We got Jacob and we got Abraham.
Yes.
The ones from Jacob, they afflict the darker people of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
All right.
And I just want to put that out there.
Thank you. We're going to...
Discussion. Okay.
All right, we're going to take another call
Good.
At 648. Good morning. You're on the air. Your name?
Good morning. This is Sam from Manhattan.
Good morning, Sam from Manhattan.
Yesterday, Gary Noe came up with two extraordinary things in his interview of Ken Ford, who was the vice chair of Pacifica Board.
Yes, sir.
One was that Bernard White and some of the other dissidents, so-called, will get an opportunity to appeal to the board
yes.
to find out and make public why they were fired, which Utrecht Reed was loath to do when she was on the air.
She was loath to open up a person's personnel file without their permission.
Exactly.
Right, and, you know, not to embarrass them. So that might come out. Also, another extraordinary thing among several was that Ken Ford said there was never an effort to sell the station.
That's right, he did.
There was never, and there never will be, an effort to sell any of the stations which belong to the Pacifica Foundation.
That's right.
All the five stations.
I heard him say that.
Well, you know, there's some things that have been going on, being done by so-called dissidents, which, you know, is rather a burdensome for the average listener. And I figure I'm an average listener to WBAI. I wake up every morning and that's the station.
No, you're not an average listener.
thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I really think that for, number one, for someone to come on the radio and say, oh, this is the station of the band, and saying every doggone day is a burden, it is tiresome, and, you know, what's the point? But the other thing is, if the people who are so-called dissidents exercise all that energy that they're putting into the fight against this particular radio station into fighting racism, colorism, I mean, I would not have the onerous task that I've taken on. I mean, come on, give it a break.
For example, if all of that organizing ability and energy and talent were put into the racial profiling that goes on here in the city and the killing of African men, we would have solved the problem by now.
Absolutely.
So that all of this energy is spent on something that people yelled fire, and apparently there's no fire.
Marjorie, I want to just say this. The spectacle of people, especially who have been so abused, depressed, repressed as people of color, being hoodwinked into the activity against their own best interest is what bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't see it.
All right.
The wool is being pulled over the eyes, and I understand where it's coming from, a central single person, which is very, very interesting that that particular person has that much influence over so-called thinking people. It's a kind of cult mentality. Mm-hmm. It's got to stop.
All right.
Okay, now I
Sam,
must ask
one
you.
More thing, Sam.
I must ask
have
you.
To go.
Excuse me, I must ask you.
Yes,
who
please.
Is that central person?
Well, don't pin her on that.
No. You have to pin her on that.
You can try.
You threw it out.
But, yeah, she did throw it out. And she will, in her time, make it public.
Absolutely.
You can't force people
you
to do that. Thank you, Sam, very much. It's 6:52. Thank you, Sam. You elucidated a few things. One more call, and then we've got to start getting out.
Oh, my goodness.
Good morning. It went fast. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
My name is Gil from Brooklyn. We spoke a couple of weeks ago.
Hello, Gil.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
I'm feeding off this conversation. I think people need to keep in mind that the whole idea of progressive people having blind spots where racism, colorism is concerned,
yes,
is a historical trend that if you would look into it, anybody, just I invite you, look into the history of the labor movement, look into the history of progressive movements, and you will find that the reason why people of goodwill have been split and effectively controlled has been because they buy into this whole idea of whiteness.
Yeah. Very well put.
Very well. I couldn't put it better myself.
The other thing that I just wanted to lay out is that people should really pay attention to the way in which disagreements are processed. By that I mean, you can tell a lot from what kind of a world someone wants to create by the way they go about advocating for their point of view.
Mm. Give me an example, Gil, of what you mean.
Okay, I was involved in the movement. I was in the Young Lords, and I remember going to a lot of meetings where polemics, now intense exchanges of opinion, I have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed over the years that there were certain people who had a very strident, petulant tone, which
very
is very good. Reminiscent to what I've been hearing over the past few weeks.
Absolutely.
And when people get that way, there's two things I'd like to bring out. First of all, you tend to turn people off from the real content of what you're trying to say,
mm-hmm.
because people see you ranting and raving.
Right.
The other thing, which I think is really important, is that we need to learn from this. Those of us disagree with the dissidents need to learn from this, because I suspect that very often when we're advocating our position to the general population, because of the frustration that we feel and the good that we want to do, what we will very often do is adopt this same strident, petulant tone. And a lot of times it's coming from the intensity of our feeling, the fact that we really want justice.
Absolutely.
Well, sometimes we have to be able to frame what we are about, and I don't mean water it down.
All right.
I mean, think about what you're saying. I mean, present it in the proper way. I think you said it before, and I think it's really good. Be prepared for the fact that you may be wrong.
Yep.
You know, all these things. And have that spirit, where you're trying to convey a spirit that I'm not against you. I actually want that's good for you.
The
but
healing.
You can't beat somebody over the head
that's
to convince
right.
them of that.
That's the healing. That's really great. Thank
you. Know what I mean?
Thank you, Gil. I want a great contribution. We've got to end Carol Taylor.
Oh, yeah. World Conference Against Racism, though.
All right, we'll do that tomorrow.
Good.
Actually, we'll do that tomorrow in
great.
Full.
Great.
All right, I want to thank you so much for contributing to this hour. It's
well,
been
I love
great.
It. It's a whole hour that's going
thank
on?
You. Well, about 45, 55 minutes.
Wow.
And it is exactly 6:55, and we're going to get out of here. Thank you, Howie, Sam from the Bronx, Sam from Brooklyn, Florence Rice from Manhattan, Brother Dahoud, and Sam, another Sam from Manhattan, and Gil, our last caller. Thank you for your contribution to this Sunrise show today. Thank you very much. All right, folks, again, a copy of today's show is available at 1-888-31-RADIO, 1-888-31-RADIO. I will be here again tomorrow morning. I'm Marjorie Moore, and I want to say thank you again, Eddie Soto, for engineering this hour for us. And folks, you stay tuned. The morning show is coming up with Santiago Nieves and Paul DiRienzo. Later on, Gary Null comes on. Democracy Now! Comes on. We have a full morning for you. So enjoy your feast, and I will see you again tomorrow. Blessings.
Go ahead, release your fears. My, oh.